The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Unpost. MyBills.ie. Help save time with bill payment online for free. Unpost. Do more.
Welcome back to the programme. An awful lot of calls in about bills, it has to be said. Marion, I paid just half my gas bill in January, but it wasn't in arrears. Then I got letters telling me to pay up immediately. And then I got constant calls from Bord Gáis telling me they were going to cut me off if the entire bill weren't paid by the end of the week. Now, remember, no arrears. And I had paid €100 off a €240 bill. I was so stunned at the heavy-handedness of them. Well, I gather there's a lot of it around. It has to be said. Now, I'm going to go to our last lyric with Mr. Moore, number 3. Calmly standing to attention as he bade his last farewell to his broken-hearted mother, whose sad grief no one can tell. So that's all 3. And you can text your answers now to 51551. Now, today's International Women's Day, celebrated by the United Nations since 1975. This year's theme is Equality for Women is Progress for All. So with that in mind, we sent Jarlath Holland out and about, I even would suggest, to ask people what International Women's Day means to them.
Hopefully it's highlighting issues that are facing women every day. Our pay is not equal. We still earn a lot less than men, and we're trying to balance having children with maintaining our rung on the career path, and it's really difficult. I hope International Women's Day kind of highlights that.
Over the years it's become a recognition that there are huge inequalities, and I think it probably does some good to address that, but it's quite clear still that women have a long way to go and that men have the upper hand, especially in places like the Middle East and Africa, and you worry about how women are going to make it in these places.
As a sex, it has taken time to find our place in the world and to, I suppose, for women to have got the opportunities that I got as a woman, to be educated and to really be myself and do what I want with my life. So I suppose it is important. It's just that probably having had the opportunities, it's less relevant to me than it would have been to somebody of a bygone era.
What does International Women's Day mean to you?
It means it's rubbish. There's no need for it. Why should they have Women's Day, Men's Day, everybody's day? It's nonsense. They're human beings like the rest of us. Women's rights, people's rights. I mean, you know, why women all the time?
The fact that we still need awareness of the fact that women's lives aren't equal. That's a pretty bad sign, really, at this stage, isn't it?
Where do you see that inequality existing?
Oh, my goodness, reproductive rights. If men had children, it'd be a different world altogether.
It doesn't mean an awful lot to me from the point of view that I think every day is International Women's Day. Every day, absolutely.
I think women's rights have really gone as far as they can at this stage. It's nearly going too far the other way, that men are being discriminated against by there being so much focus on women's rights. I'd say no, it doesn't serve any purpose. Not in Ireland, anyway.
Last year I went to an International Women's Day and they gave us manicures. Fortune tellers came in. They just celebrated the whole day for women, just kind of like a day off.
Why is it important to be pampered for the few hours or to get the few hours off?
It's so important because women work all day. Sometimes you don't get a minute. You're getting the children ready then. The minute you come home from work, you're getting children ready for bed, food, bed, homeworks. It's just non-stop. It's 24 hours a day. And sometimes just to have even an hour or two to yourself is magnificent, you know. It actually is leisure when you get it to yourself.
Well, there you go. And a very happy Women's Day to them all, I gather. In Ireland, as I was saying, it's probably Brian O'Driscoll Day, but I gather there are crowds gathering outside the Shelburne down there to wish him well. Don't be hyping them or psyching them before the match. Anyway, now we're going to talk about food, and we're going to talk about one thing in particular in terms of dietary problems. But I want to go back first of all over. I'm sorry, I should say, with me in studio is herself, so to speak, of this area, Paula Mee, and you're very welcome indeed to the programme. Now, I'm looking here at what paper is that? I think it was the Times, right? Mm-hmm. On the London Times on Wednesday. And they have cheese and meat in middle age are a recipe for early death, say scientists. Now, that was of a Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we had halve sugar intake, say health experts. And then referring back to the article earlier in the week, we have today, no proven link between cancer and eating meat. And then on the front of the Telegraph today, we have the low-fat food stuffed with harmful levels of sugar. Oh, and I forgot to say that that was the head in there. Have sugar intake, say health experts. It seems to me that maybe starvation is the only way one can go with all that kind of advice.
Well, I really hope people are reading beyond the headlines, because the headlines can be very sensational.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of research in this area now. And if we just take the cancer study.
Yeah.
The research tracked thousands of adults, and they tracked them for 20 years. And they found that people who ate excessive amounts of animal protein were four times more likely to die of cancer than someone on a low-protein diet. Now, the word is excessive protein. So I suppose it just really reminds us that fad diets like those...
Like the Atkins.
Yeah, yeah, like those are not good for us, you know. And again, I suppose the World Health Organization, this is an old message, this is an old guideline, but it's been reiterated. I was interested in reading Marion Nestle's blog. She is a professor in... New York University, I think. And she quite simply says that there was quite a big lobby against the guideline from the sugar industry. But because of the high levels now of obesity that America are facing, that they have to do something about this. So this is a guideline that has been there in the background. And that is.
And what is it?
It's that we really should be reducing our free sugars. So free sugars are added sugars. They're added by the food industry, you know, to things to make foods more palatable. So, you know, foods that have a long shelf life, ready to eat meals.
Low fat.
Yeah, yeah, they
Explain
probably add a bit of
sugar. Explain to people about the low fat.
Well, sometimes when you remove fat, there isn't an awful lot of flavour left. So manufacturers will add something in place of that. And sometimes it's sugar.
And sometimes it's salt.
Sometimes it could be salt, or it could be a seasoning like chilli. You know, so it doesn't necessarily have to be bad.
Yeah.
So I suppose you really do have to look at food labels. And this is the difficulty, because a lot of people do read the food labels, but they don't understand them.
Yeah.
So, you know, nine out of 10 of us apparently try to read them, but only one out of 10 can fully understand them. So there needs to be more work in this area, really, to help people.
Yeah. But to go back to our friend, the proteins, because people consider it a good diet. You know, we've always had to eat the meat and two veg.
Yeah.
But I gather as you get older, you should eat more protein.
Well, they found in that study that those over 65 didn't have any negative adverse consequences of increasing their protein. And that may be because as we get older as well, we lose some muscle mass. And those people may benefit more from additional protein. So we know, for example, that having a little protein in breakfast in the form of milk or yogurt is a good idea. Or some people top their cereal with maybe nuts or seeds or things like that to increase the protein. Having some protein at lunchtime, and ideally some plant protein, like in the form of legumes, like peas, beans and lentils, is a good idea.
Right.
So it could be a lentil soup or a bean soup, something like that. And then in the evening meal, an ample protein like a fish protein or a chicken or red meat. Now, the thing about this study is that it does back up previous studies to suggest that too much excessive amount of red meat in particular, but specifically processed red meat, so anything that's cured or salted or has added ingredients like nitrates to preserve it, is bad for us. You know, and there's a body of research now. There also would be a body of research in around the colonic cancer research area, which would suggest that processed meat is harmful.
For beef, processed meat, what are you talking about?
No,
burgers and that kind of thing?
Well, low-grade, low-quality sausages, you know, deli meats, things that are cured and salted and smoked. So, for example, I'm thinking of like salamis, that type of... those are found, you know, frequently in children's lunchboxes, and they're not the right food. They're not the right protein to be feeding young children.
Really? Gosh, yeah. I would have thought salamis were associated with healthy things, you know, like olives.
Olives, yes. Yes, well, dig into the olives, Marion. But not so much of the salamis.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Now, anyway, I know that you always come back to the same thing. It's like use your wit and everything in moderation. But sometimes with all of those headlines, you know.
It is very confusing. And I have to say to people, you know, don't be put off. You know, enjoy your protein. Enjoy red meat 3 times a week. But do include some fish, maybe twice a week, one oily and one white. Have chicken and vegetarian sources of peas, beans and lentils the rest of the week. You know, protein is really important and red meat is a good source of iron. It's a good source of zinc and B vitamins. Yeah. So, you know, it offers an awful lot. It's when it is processed that we have to be very careful. So low grade, you know, low quality sausages, cheap meats, cheap beef burgers, your homemade beef burger, if it's made from homemade lean mince, no problem. Yeah. You know, no problem. You know what the ingredients are.
Right. OK, now you wanted to talk to us about, you've done work on this yourself, irritable bowel syndrome. Which is what?
Well, it's a functional gut disorder. That's how it's described. But it's characterised by lots of different symptoms like abdominal pain, discomfort, altered frequency and stool formation. So people can feel really gurgly in their tummy. They can feel nauseous. But there are different types of IBS. And their subtypes are IBS-D, which is where the patient suffers predominantly from diarrhoea, or IBS-C, which is where the patient suffers predominantly from constipation. Or you can have IBS-M, which is mixed, where somebody alternates between diarrhoea and constipation. Now, this might not sound very significant, but it is very disabling. And it affects affects up to 20% of the population. I've often met patients who say they won't get on a bus to go into town because they need to know where the nearest loo is. They have no quality of life. It stops them in terms of relationships, in terms of social life, in terms of work. And in fact, IBS is ranked second in the cause of absence from work and school.
Really?
Yeah. It significantly interferes with the quality of life. And in fact, when you look at how prevalent this is, as study recently looked in the UK and found that 1 in 12 GP consultations were about gut symptoms, you know, gastro symptoms, and 46% of those people were diagnosed with IBS. So it is major, and people have been, you know, saying that it can reduce the quality of life to the same degree as something like diabetes or, for example, congestive heart failure. So it's very significant in people's lives. It can knock about 73 days out of your year in terms of activity because you can be in bed curled up with pain, really unsure of what to eat, you know, avoiding situations where, especially if you are very windy and you're flatulent, you can imagine work situations where you really don't want to find yourself in.
Right, sure don't. There is a diet that you think helps.
Yeah, now there's no single treatment because there's no single cause for this gut problem. You know, there's pharmacological interventions like antispasmatics and antidiarrheal agents and laxatives and all of that type of thing. And then there's cognitive behavioural therapy, which is a psychological therapy. But this new diet is very, very, I suppose, promising because up to now we've had very little. We'd have limited success with patients who have IBS. So in the past, we would have increased fibre, you know, and significantly increased fibre. But in fact, we found that in many patients, that actually had, you know, a worse effect on their symptoms. So the FODMAPS diet, it's called the low FODMAPS diet. Now, FODMAPS is it's a bit of a mouthful.
It is.
FODMAP stands for
F-O-D-M-A-P-S.
Fermentable oligo, di and monosaccharides and polyols.
Oh, so you can see.
You can
see old friends, yeah.
You can see why we have that acronym. You know, now it's a bit complicated, but to give you an example, like I suppose the monosaccharide that we're talking about is fructose, excess fructose. This is a sugar. And if we have too much of this in the diet, and you can look at some of the diets in the States to find this high fructose corn syrup nearly practically in every food. It must be a nightmare to follow this type of diet over there. But excess of this type of sugar can cause problems, as it can with lactose, which is a milk sugar, or fructans or galactans. These are found in legumes like peas, beans and lentils. And then you have sort of artificial sweeteners like polyols, sorbitol, mannitol. They're found in your sugar-free gum and your sugar-free peppermints, those kind of things.
Yeah.
But what happens really is that these are poorly absorbed in all of us, whether we have IBS or not.
Right.
They're not easily absorbed by the gut. But in people who have this functional gut disorder, they go from the small intestine largely undigested, and they have this osmotic effect. So they actively encourage water into the gut, which expands the gut, and it causes distension. And so this luminal distension causes a lot of pain and discomfort. And that visible look that you get, you know, where a lot of patients would describe that they might wake up with a flat stomach, but by the end of the day, they look as if they're 6 months pregnant.
Right. Okay.
So that pain and discomfort and abdominal pain is really what we're trying to look at by reducing these FODMAPs in the diet.
Right. You did a lot of this work yourself. You produced Polamine Nutrition Consulting and supported by Flavins, because I know that oats are involved in it as well. And people can go to your own website, which is www.polamine.com.
That's right.
Yeah. And will they get the recommended diet, or should you go through your GP?
No, you really need to go through your GP or your gastroenterologist, and they will refer to you to a dietitian who's trained in FODMAPs. It's really important. It is a dietetic-led intervention. You have about 3 consultations. The first one really is an elimination phase where you cut out these high FODMAP foods, and you're given a specific list of foods to increase in your diet to make up for the lost fiber, for example, and the lost nutrients.
Right.
When you're cutting out so many foods, some of them very healthy foods.
Yes.
Like peas and beans and lentils.
Yeah.
And then you come back and you consistently, in a systematic way, you challenge yourself with these foods and you find out what your trigger foods are. And then you may have to avoid those in the long term. So you need an adequately balanced diet.
Right.
So do go to your GP or your gastroenterologist and your qualified dietitian.
Okay. Well, it all sounds very, very interesting. I never heard of FODMAPs in my life, but I will not forget them. Okay. Thank you very, very much, Paula. Just before we go, as you know, Christy Moore is the man today. And the winner is Amanda Luttrell of Birr County Offaly. Amanda, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Mary.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
What was the first one?
The first one was Nancy Spain.
Love Nancy Spain. What was the second one?
Delirium Tremens.
Love that one too. And what was the third one?
Kevin Barry.
Well done. Are you a fan?
Oh, I'm a huge fan, yes, for many years.
Have you ever gone to any of his gigs?
Yes. Quite a few over the years. Delighted with this now.
Okay.
We tried for Garth Brooks, so.
Oh, did you? Well,
half
the country on that one as well. Anyway, listen, well done. Congratulations. Thank you very much indeed. And I hope you enjoyed. That's all we've time for today. Today's programme was produced by the series producer, Anne Farrell. Research, Susan O'Loughlin and Richie Byrne. Broadcasting coordinator, Jareth Holland. And on sound, Sheila Neveal. Back with you tomorrow, 11 to 1. Do join us then. Until then, a very good day to you.
The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Unpost. Visitors to the UK can get sterling commission free at selected post offices. Unpost. Do more.